From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday, and I'm Joe Palca. For the rest of this hour, a look literally at thinking. Researchers at Caltech say they have captured the brain signals of monkeys as the monkeys think about making a certain move. They can take that signal and use it to make the movement the monkey was thinking about. A bit of a twist on the old monkey see, monkey do, monkey think researcher do. Researchers say this ability is a first step toward helping people who can only think about moving, people with spinal cords and other forms of paralysis, and help them move. Someday maybe it will be possible to use the thoughts, for example, to move a prosthetic arm or leg. If you'd like to join the conversation about this research, our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And joining me now is the scientist who did the research. Richard Anderson is the James G. Boswell Professor of Neuroscience at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena, also known as Caltech. Dr. Anderson, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So maybe I'm being a little glib here, but really you are... if not recording brain waves, you're certainly recording brain signals from monkeys as they learn to do a task. Maybe you can describe the task and what they did without actually performing the task.
Oh, sure. So we first teach them to reach to target on a computer screen and press it. It's a little like operating an ATM. And then once we know we're at the same time recording the activity of single neurons in a part of the brain that previously we knew was important for forming the thought to make a reach movement. Once we do that, this reaching, we can obtain data about the pattern of activity that corresponds to reaches in different locations on the screen, and then we can ask the monkey by briefly flashing a cue to plan a reach toward that location, but to withhold the reach. And during that period, we read out his thought to reach to that location, place a cursor at the location that he's thinking about it, and if it's in the right location, give him a reward of a drop of juice.
Huh. So the monkey is looking at a screen, and the first task is to reach out and touch a part of the screen. And then the second time, the monkey's looking at a screen, and he sees a place on the screen he would have normally been asked to touch, but this time he's just asked to think about touching it.
That's right.
And how do you know where in his brain, or what brain signal tells you that that's the place he wants you to move the cursor to?
Oh, yes. Well, each one of these cells has what we call a receptive field, which means that it's selective for a particular part of visual space. So when those cells become that cell becomes active, it's indicating that the monkey is thinking of reaching to that particular location.
I see. So there's a sort of a representation of the real world inside the brain, and you can tell what part of the real world, the brain's version of the real world, is lighting up or active, and that tells you where the real world is supposed to be.
Exactly. That's
wow.
Right.
I don't know if I don't think I would say exactly. I think that was very generous of you to say exactly. But I think I'm on the right track. Okay. So it seems to me that I read about some, or maybe I even reported about, it's been a while, some researchers who were doing something similar to this at Duke University. What's different here? They were looking at reaching behavior also, but you're looking at a different part of the brain.
Yes, that's right. So that's Miguel Nicolelis and his group at Duke. Also, Donahue and Schwartz groups have been looking at the motor cortex. So this is a part of the brain that issues the execution signal to move the limb. So we've gone to an area a bit earlier in the pathway that first codes the goal or intention of the subject, and then the signal is sent to the motor cortex to be elaborated into a command to form an arm trajectory or hand trajectory.
I see. So in other words, this is you can maybe think about this as a more thoughtful and less mechanical process, or more thoughtful and less mechanical part of the brain?
Well, I think maybe a better way of thinking of it is more abstract. So the area we record from is saying, I'd like to reach out to grab this cup of coffee, and the motor cortex is saying, move my hand in a particular direction to get to the coffee cup.
I see. So one is more get the coffee, and the other one is move your arm 20 degrees to the left and straight out 10 inches. I got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the thought here? I'm sure that it's not just to exercise control over monkey brains. I intimated that there was an implication for spinal cord patients. Is that true?
Yes. The idea there, then is that say someone, as you mentioned in your intro, who's paralyzed can still think about making movements, but they can't actually execute them. So much like the experiments with the healthy monkeys, we would implant these small wires in the areas of the brain that issue or commands to make movements or the thoughts to make movements, and then we would interpret those signals, and we could use them to operate a vehicle or a computer for communication or a robot limb, any variety of external devices to help the patients.
Has any step been made in human patients in this direction?
Yes, there's a group. Phil Kennedy has a company in Atlanta. They've implanted locked-in patients before in the motor cortex. They were able to get a patient.
I'm sorry, a locked-in patient?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Oh, this is a patient that can't move their limbs, but they also can't speak. So they're completely paralyzed, yet totally conscious. So the only reason you know that is often these patients have rudimentary movements, like they can move an eyelid. So he was able to get a patient to move a cursor to the left or right on a computer screen, to operate a spelling board. There's also John Donahue at Brown University has a company which is recently got FDA approval to implant motor cortex with electrodes and
motor cortex being the part of the brain that controls movements, I presume.
That's right.
And he implants, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. He's also trying to help people who are paralyzed start a movement using just their brain waves.
That's right.
So, obviously, this is no longer science fiction, although it certainly has that quality, but how sophisticated a movement is it that the monkeys are making, and how sophisticated right now can we even hope to be able to do with humans? I mean, you mentioned letters on a keyboard, but is that as far as we can go for a while, or is it really possible that an arm movement or something like that using a robotic arm could be generated?
Yeah, I think in particular, the idea would be to use smart devices. So say if you're recording from our area and you send out a general or abstract signal to to reach for something, then the exact details of that would be worked out by a smart robot that would then move the limb in that direction. Besides this goal signal, two of the postdocs that were working on this project, the lead author Sam Musalam and Brian Corneal, through serendipity discovered that if they, as the monkey was doing this brain control task and getting tired toward the end of the day, the performance was going down. They found if they increased the amount of fluid reward, suddenly the cells were responding better, and we could read their minds more easily.
Is that how you really think about it, reading their minds?
Yes. And in fact, so what we did was we would tell the monkey ahead of time on each trial whether to, for instance, expect their favorite juice or just reward. And we could determine from the neural activity not only the goal of his movement, but whether it was the preferred stimulus reward he expected or the non-preferred one. So that represents an additional cognitive signal that we could use to help paralyzed patients. So you could imagine online you could monitor their moods and motivations. You wouldn't have to always be asking them how do they feel or how are they engaged in this task. It would be another bit of information that you could directly obtain from the patients as well as the goals of their movements.
We're talking about using, or the possibility, or in fact the reality of using brain waves to control movements and motions and perhaps even smart devices. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And I'm Joe Palka, and this is Talk of the Nation. Before I go to the calls, I just wanted to ask you, is it really, when you say you tell the monkeys to expect this, are you literally saying, I'm about to give you a juice reward, or do you have another way of telling them?
So when we start a trial, we flash a little cue, and depending that day on the meaning of the cue, so say maybe a large triangle might mean to expect water and a small one to expect orange juice. The monkey, after about 10 trials, learns to associate that cue with the reward the monkey's going to get once he moves the cursor correctly.
Got it.
And we, from trial to trial, we randomly give one or the other. And we can actually, 90% or greater of the time, tell what the monkey is expecting to get.
Got it. Okay, let's invite our listeners to join the conversation. Ken in Maryville, Illinois, welcome to the program.
Hi. I had a comment that I was going to make. It seems to me that I heard here a while back of a Japanese researcher who was able to get somebody to turn a light switch on by just thinking about it, and it didn't make any difference whether the person was thinking in Japanese or whether the person was thinking about turning it on in, as an American person in English. It worked the same thing.
Hmm. Did you ever hear of that, Dr. Anderson?
Not that particular study, but in terms of language, we have thought that since we've and other groups have now demonstrated that you can get several cognitive variables out of the brain, a possible extension would be to record from speech regions. So if you had a locked-in patient who couldn't speak, you could conceivably record their actual language thoughts, the words that they're thinking. And this would, of course, be much more efficient than having them operate a cursor and a spelling board and moving a cursor to different letters and spelling words out.
Ken, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Derek in Fort Lauderdale. We only have a couple of minutes. What's your question?
Yes. The signals that you get from the brainwave, and this is a very good program. I really appreciate it, and thank you very much for putting it on.
Thank you.
And coming back to what I was asking, the signals that you get from the brainwave, are they the characteristics of those signals, are they specifically only for the monkey from which you're getting it, or do they have identifications that can be used to understand pretty well the same thing from other monkeys?
So in other words, if you know what one monkey, if you do this with one monkey, will it apply to all the others?
Go ahead.
Dr. Anderson. Sorry, go ahead and answer the question.
Yes, that's right, and that's a good question. So this is an area of the brain that contains about 10 million neurons, and we record maybe from 40 or 50 of these in the experiments. And we know, though, that we did this in three monkeys, and the cells all behaved in the same fashion. So as we mentioned earlier, they all have this map of space with different cells responding to different locations in space and all becoming active when the animal intends to reach. Now, we've also done what are called functional magnetic resonance imaging experiments in humans. This monitors changes in blood flow that are linked to neural activity. And we found what appears to be the homologue of this region as well in the human.
Wow. Well, Dr. Anderson, I guess what this means is we're going to have you back on the show because there's way too many interesting questions to ask, but I'm afraid that's all the time we have. Thanks very much for today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay. Richard Anderson is the James G. Boswell Professor of Neuroscience at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena. This program is produced by Annette Heist, Erica Altman, and Karen Vergoth. Charles Bergquist is our director and web producer. Our intern is Julie Kalin. If you'd like to write to us, please send your letters to Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. For internet mail, you can email us at our internet address, scifry@npr.org. I'd like to say an official goodbye to Leith Bishop, who's the executive producer of Talk of the Nation, as she moves out west today. For NPR News in New York, I'm Joe Palca.